Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch.
Welcome, everybody, to Fantasy Football Tonight. I'm your host, Todd the True Guru Freeno, and of course, I will be joined shortly by Mr. R.C. Rizza. We have a jam-packed show to talk about today, lots to cover. We're going to do a big segment on players that can burn you over the next couple of seasons or over the next couple of games. Also, we're going to be talking about some DFS stuff. As you know, we've been coming to you for 9 years, giving you fantastic fantasy advice. We really don't do it for the money. We do it for the industry. We support the industry. We've been involved with it since its infancy, and we will continue to be involved with it, and we will continue to defend it against the creepers that have joined in with our fantasy league to take advantage of it and some of the scum that that's brought along with. As you know, I've never, first of all, I've never been afraid to speak my mind. I've never been afraid to call somebody out. And I've never really been afraid to, make people who don't like me. If you don't like what I say, you don't have to listen. That's the beauty and the freedom of this great God-given country that we live in today. Going on, I'll start it off right now, onto the DFS scandal that's been going on, all those blowhards over at the Sirius Radio, who are all on the payroll of FanDuel. I mean, if you don't get it yet, they're all on the payroll. They all stand by FanDuel and DraftKings mercilessly because their paycheck depends on it. And it's kind of like going to, like I said before, as an example, like a politician who's getting paid by a lobbyist to support a bill, even though his constituents don't like him. But this week we had a very interesting development this week. When the DFS Players Conference has probably had, about a couple hundred people at it, because who cares, went and they wanted to protest the Attorney General of New York, protest his office, because FanDuel's office is right there, same building. It's not the building right next to it, but I believe it's the same building. So they had about 250 people protesting out of the 30 to 60 million who play fantasy sports. I mean, I know just in fantasy football and fantasy baseball alone, there's close to 30 million fantasy sports players. I'm throwing the rest out there for the NASCAR, NHL, and NBA guys. But 250 people showed up, of which reportedly about 100 of them were FanDuel employees. So FanDuel sent their own employees to protest the Attorney General and his decision for the gambling. So I'm going to go on a quick little monologue here, and then I'm going to, of course, bring in RC to pretty much right the ship, put sense to everything I say. That's what he's been doing for 9 years. I just basically act like I'm taking crazy pills.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
That's how I feel right now. Holy crap. And I'm going to call some people out because I think they are dirtbags. But I'll do that in a second. So, RC, just bear with me for a moment. Let me bring him in. Can you bear with me while I get in my soapbox for a moment?
Sure, go ahead.
There you go. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. So, basically, and this is what's been going on for weeks, and we've stayed on top of it because, I mean, I know I am, and maybe RC is not quite as passionate. He's a little bit more, libertarian, and he'll speak his own mind. But, I'm really a defender of fantasy football, and I honestly believe, and I've been saying this for weeks, that what DFS has done is it's let these creepers from poker who lost their little gambling avenues years ago to gamble online and basically steal money from other people. That's really what it is, and I'll get into that because me and RC have argued about the gambling aspect of it. and what's the difference? And there is a difference. But, you know, in this, in what these, by allowing all these poker players now in, which is really what it is, it's a bunch of statistical wannabe poker players with money to burn, and they don't mind throwing lots of money out there to take a risk to win lots of money. And really what they're doing is they're just robbing the regular fantasy dudes. So I put on my Twitter, which is at TrueGuruFarino. Go ahead, you know, check it out, follow me. On I put the great segment John Oliver did on last week with John Oliver. Great segment he did on Daily Fantasy Sports. He's covered a lot of what we've covered. But basically, the gist of it is that you're not playing against regular people. You're playing against these professional poker players with their analytical and algorithms. We've been, you know, analytical skills and their algorithms they're using, their spreadsheets, and which don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, me and RC use some of those too, but not to the level these guys do. And when you're doing that kind of stuff, plus putting in thousands of entries, no, to Jeff Manns and the rest of you blowhards, it's not skill. Okay? I was just now talking about it with RC about some of the players you have to pick. I mean, you look at some of these winning rosters, no person in their right mind with any level of skill from A to Z would choose that roster. But that's the roster that win because it's not skill, it's luck. And it's based on chance. And until you guys stop lying to your own constituents who you're sitting here convincing that it's okay to do what they're doing with the gambling, so be it. That's on your soul. Let me throw out a few stats here, and RC's going to comment on these in about 1.5 minutes. 85% of the people who play on FanDuel and DraftKings lose. 85%. Check out the stats. John Oliver stats, and that was in the report that was done over the summertime. Number two, 1.3% of the players win 90% of the money. I already covered some of these stats earlier. This is the facts. I don't understand how anybody can go out there and tell their listeners, hey, bet on this, do this, you're going to win because you're going to be awesome because I'm going to give you the information even though you're playing against me. How you could do that, I don't know. I don't even care. So now you know you're playing against poker players. They figured out a way to weasel in on the open door that was left in the federal gambling law. I forgot the exact name of that. I'm sure RC will remind me of that AIGI whatever bill that is. The act, the gambling act, but that they left the door open for us fantasy guys, and now that door itself is going to be threatened to be closed if the government decides to take further action because they can't stop, you know, stuff like this going on with the gamblers. The final point I'm going to make, RC, is why is it different? And you guys brought this up, and I've had this question brought up to me via email as well. Why is it different? Here's why it's different. In lotteries, everyone just throwing in a few bucks, hoping that they pick numbers and win. There's no harm to anybody. I mean, you throw 10 bucks, you throw 20 bucks. The crazy people throw 100 bucks. Hey, yeah, I'm going to try to win. You know, if I get my numbers, I win. Okay? And everybody knows how a lottery works. Simplest form of gambling. If you're playing in a casino in Las Vegas, you're not taking money from your buddy. You're not taking money from some other guys who are playing, who are trying to have fun playing fantasy football with you. You're taking money from a casino, a corporation. Who cares? It's a corporation. They're trying to take your money. You're trying to take money. Fair is fair. When you're playing in a fantasy football league, like I said, it's a bunch of friends get together, throw a bunch of money in a pot, have some fun, talk some smack, have some parties, and at the end of the year, a few people win money and a few people don't. That's what it is normally. Now what you're looking at with it, you know, with the gambling is you're playing against people you don't even know. And they're sitting here thinking, hey, I just want to have fun like I did with fantasy football. I just want to have the fun. They can't have the fun because now they're losing every week. And those are the people, that is the generation we're going to lose because of blowhards. That's my perfect term right now, RC. Like Jeff Manns going out there and threatening the AG on Facebook saying that you shouldn't screw with people who do research. Let me tell you something, Jeff. You don't do research. I don't even care what you think. You don't. You sit there. And you talk about players after they've been done through something good. I didn't hear one person mention Chris Givens for the Baltimore Ravens last week on Sirius Radio. Not a soul. I didn't listen to every show. Maybe I missed one. But out of all the shows I heard, not one. Where was that guy? Oh, my God. He came out and got a touchdown, got five catches or four or five catches, like 50 yards. That would have been a nice little cheap pickup on DFS. But that's because you guys don't have any researching work. All you're doing is playing to FanDuel, and you're going to pay the price because when it's no longer available, where are you guys going to go there for your paychecks? Anyways, RC, I'm sorry I had to go on that little bit of a rant. I just and by the way, all of them should be considered FanDuel employees and be exempt from playing, but for some reason they're not. So, RC, put me back in my corner, knock me off my box, punch me out. It's all the mic is yours.
No, I mean, you know, what you're saying is right, but you know, obviously this should be defined as gambling. I didn't realize, like, the lopsided stats that you mentioned. To the extent that those are true, I mean, it makes sense because that 1.5% that are actually winning all the money, like we were discussing before, you really need a certain mindset. And once again, I'm not saying there's anything bad about this because this is also the mindset of a professional poker player where they're willing to be fairly reckless in a way that the normal person would not be with you know, monetary bets. So someone like that who, you know, goes all in with like a 2 and a 7, you know, that's the kind of people that you're dealing with. And the way that they do it is really because I don't care what anyone says about, you know, you applying some kind of statistical algorithm and all that nonsense. Yes, I've been doing this for like almost 20 years now. I know all about that. And I can tell you that you can increase your odds a bit better than flipping a coin, but you're not going to come up with something that's going to be accurate to the extent where you can place a couple bets and be assured of winning every week. The only way that you're going to do that is you basically know that there's a finite number of outcomes and you're going to expend enough money to make enough bets that you cover enough of those outcomes where you're going to get some kind of return. That's the only way. There is no magic algorithm. Like, for example, this past week, the top two running backs were Jeremy Langford and Chikandrick West. Was there an algorithm that was going to tell you that? I'm sorry, there was not. Especially like we were talking about before. Did we find out who Jeremy Langford played this week? Because that was like a very, very unexpected result. You know, given that it definitely wasn't a cake game that he basically tore apart.
Oh, you're asking who the Bears played this week? Yeah, they played the Rams. They played the Rams in St. Louis.
They played the Rams in St. Louis, and this was a guy going on his second start. All anyone really knew about. Look, we know the kind of things that we talk about where, you know, we were talking about Jeremy Langford in the preseason from the context of, hey, keep an eye on this guy. You know, Forte is obviously an elite player, but this should be the guy that wins the backup role. He looked really good in the combine. He was the fastest running back there. You know, he seems to have, you know, good running skills, maybe a little weak on, you know, catching passes. He was, you know, that's the kind of stuff that we talk about. But when you know, now at this point, when you're considering, you know, playing him some daily fantasy contest and he's at St. Louis playing one of the toughest defenses in the league and he becomes the top scorer, sorry, there was no algorithm that was going to tell you that was going to happen. I don't care who you are. Who's the guy in the wheelchair that knows everything about space?
Stephen Hawking?
Right. Stephen Hawking didn't have an algorithm that told you that Jeremy Langford was going to be the top running back this week. I'm sorry. So that's what it is, you know. And I'm fine with that. It's like I have no problem with professional poker players. I have no problem with this. But call it what it is. You know, it is gambling, pure and simple.
Yeah, you know what? You know, and the bigger point though for me is that it's destroying, you know, traditional fantasy football. And like, you know, by the way, like I said earlier in the show, there's about 30 million people who play the major fantasy sports, and there are about 3.5 million people between FanDuel and DraftKings playing daily fantasy sports. Now I know there are other smaller entities that have gotten involved, like Yahoo and all of them, but they're, you know, not really in effect effective right now in numbers. But the 3.5, you know, that's it. And, you know, so that's barely 10% of the fantasy players just between football and baseball. So it's really a crappy stat for them to consider. And by the way, we already told you, like, last show, I think it was like 7 to 8% of North America actually even subscribes to you know, the blowhard, you know, Sirius Fantasy Radio with the cincadas and the Jeff Manns, who all they do is they pump out this stuff. You know, for me, it's just it's an honor thing. You know, it's been an honor for me to be involved in this industry for the last, you know, 11 years that I've been involved. You've been involved in it longer than me, probably 15, 16, 17 years. And we've watched it grow from being very little. And then I remember, you know, we got on Block Talk Radio 9 years ago, and we basically for years dominated. We had like the top fantasy football show or fantasy baseball show, or the second best fantasy football, fantasy baseball show. I mean, I remember Jeff and, you know, after, you know, I basically fired him from our staff after we raised him from a little baby, you know, and then he ran off to the next opportunity. As, of course, we already pointed out he has no loyalty. You know, he sat there. His show was buried. We couldn't even find his show on the listings. Nobody was listening to him. You know, so now he thinks a bunch of people are listening to him. But really, I'm canceling my subscription with Sirius when it ends in December. I don't care. The information on the Fantasy Channel is nothing but people selling a commercial, which, by the way, you got sick of seeing the FanDuel and DraftKings commercials? According to the John Oliver show, I did not know this. Every 90 seconds they were playing a commercial over the last couple of months. Every 90 seconds, somewhere in TV world, you would see one of those commercials. I mean, that is incredible coverage. And then, you know, and then I put up a stat, you know, a little while ago, and somebody retweeted, and it was one of Jeff's, you know, people. I mean, he has 18,000 followers on Twitter, and four of them came to his rescue. And the only one that actually had the balls to mouth off to me was, of course, a poker player. Because his picture is a poker. So he's a poker player. And, you know, but one of them retweeted my stat where I said that FanDuel, some lady, that FanDuel and DraftKings, basically the fantasy, daily fantasy sports industry, are spending roughly about $1,000 to acquire a customer. And I don't think people understood, and then that customer then spends on average of, they make about an average of $200 off of each customer. And I don't think that that person or any of Jeff's people, because I don't think most of Jeff's listeners are educated people because they're listening to Jeff. But the bottom line is this. When you do commercials every 90 seconds, when you're matching, when you're matching deposits up to $200, when you're now their latest damage control promotion is they'll give you your winnings back if you lose a bet up to $10, up to $10 entry fee. Oh, that's a big one there for you, FanDuel. But they're sitting here now, and, you know, it's called CAC, C-A-C, cost to acquire a customer. So, again, for that person who retweeted, I know they weren't retweeting it to be friendly because they were one of Jeff's followers. You can still put up your hiney and learn something now. There's a lot of money that goes into acquiring a customer. I'm sorry. You know, you got to look, you know, AT&T does it, Sprint does it, DirecTV does it, a lot of money. And right now they are spending more money than they can possibly imagine to acquire customers because they believe in the long term they'll grow big enough and those customers will stick around that they'll actually start making money. So these companies are losing money off their butts, but they have plenty of capital venture, you know, investors who are throwing money at them, including large corporations like Fox, like CBS, you know, like NBC. These people are throwing money at them, but right now their biggest problem is the law, RC. And they broke the law, and they took advantage of the fantasy football window to get into it, and that's what has angered me the most, is they didn't go out there and say, we're going to do something completely different. No, they said, we lost poker on Black Monday, so now we're going to go out and we're going to do it with fantasy football. And that is the part that has angered me the most, that they are damaging the reputation long-term of fantasy football, not only in the eyes of senators, the NFL Players Association, congressmen, you know, governors, states, whomever who can actually say it's illegal or you don't want to do it, and even the NFL to some degree, are sitting here doing this. And they're sitting, but they're damaging it also in the eyes of the up-and-coming fantasy football players who sit here and they think, oh, my God, I can win $1 million because that guy on the commercial did. And then before you know it, they've lost their college money, and, you know, and they're like, they hate the sport. And you know, and on the final point, one last, well, I'll let you go, Arthur. I can hear you bristling there.
I'm fine. Go ahead.
So, and, you know, the final point is this, is that when it comes down to integrity, integrity is about, you know, doing what's right. I don't care about gambling. I live in a gambling state. I don't think there's anything wrong with gambling. But what you got to do is you don't go into an industry and rip it to shreds and then change it completely for your own personal gain. Why, Mr. Mann? Because FanDuel came and said, we're going to sponsor your show and we're going to give you money and we want you to destroy your own integrity so you can sit here and pawn off our stuff. And then when you guys get caught red-handed doing it, then you turn around. And oh, by the way, another great point of the John Oliver show turns out is they don't call it gambling, but they got gambling licenses in the UK, both DraftKings and FanDuel. And furthermore, they meta-tagged their page for betting, for sports betting. So if you look up, baseball sports or betting or, you know, stuff like that, FanDuel comes up. And then here's one funny point, RC. They actually sponsor the World Series of Poker. DraftKings does. I mean, it's like if you're trying to distance yourself from gambling and you're trying to distance yourself from poker, that's just ridiculous. Anyways, we're going to go ahead and move on now. I'm going to let you wrap it up, RC. I'm just saying I am boycotting the fantasy sports, channel on Sirius, and I hope all my listeners do. And if you have anything you want to say to me about this, I can take the beating at TrueGuruFarino on Twitter. By all means, let me have it, just like all of, Jeff's, four people who came after me, I've all real followers. I don't really care. I can take the beating. I'm here for one reason, that's fantasy football, just like I was here trying to stop these same blowhards who destroyed the Blog Talk Radio channel and then left it in the dust once Sirius came around. Well, we're still here. We're still taking care of our pie. And frankly, the fact that we have thousands of listeners, basically every show, I really don't care about what else I have to do. It's probably comparable to what Jeff has. All right, RC, I'm done, blasting the – I mean, I just couldn't believe some of the things he was saying. He was, like, threatening the AG because he's going to do research and find that he, like, went to a seedy motel or something and then out him all because he's trying to really follow the law. I just don't understand the thinking. Clear my mind from the RC.
Well, look, I don't think, like we talked about last week, I think what the Attorney General did was a little bit far-reaching, and I think he basically dictated what the law was, and I don't think I think what he did was a bit arbitrary and hypocritical, given all the other legal venues of gambling in the state, namely and predominantly the New York State Lottery. I don't understand how the lottery is any different from daily fantasy sports. As a matter of fact, your odds are better with daily fantasy sports. So are you really going to cancel your Sirius Radio? You realize if you do that, you're going to be missing out on, they have a whole station just for soft rock hits of 1974. Because if you recall that year, the year you were born, actually, but that was Cat Stevens and Steely Dan and, song Horse With No Name, whoever did that. I think, so you're going to miss out on all that. Actually, there's a channel on there. I learned how to carve my own wooden flute. So they've got channels for everything. How are you going to do without that? I don't understand. So, before you get hasty, you should maybe reconsider that part of your decision.
Right now it just comes up in December, and I've only had it since June. I had Sirius a long time ago, and then I didn't see a lot of value in it then, but I got it now, and then I just see some of the quality content that they put on there. I mean, I love nothing more than hearing about, Sincada tell me how he, took notebooks into a bar and when he's never written a thing in his life, and he's never done any real work in his life. He's just been a mouthpiece for the fantasy football mafia, then Fantasy Pro 911, and for some reason he keeps tripping and falling into work and whatever. I mean, he's turned it into something that he's really not. And I mean, by the way, I've played in leagues against all these guys, and never once has Jeff Mann, Tony Sincada, or any of those guys beaten me. And right now, by the way, I used to always, when I was actively doing the Fantasy Football Tonight blog, I actually put my leagues up for everybody to see. It's like, here, let's if you want to follow somebody who's good, I'll show you how well I do. And I put my leagues up, full disclosure. And right now, it's like, I'm in, I guess you'd call it the equivalent of at least five expert leagues, including one with Evan Silva, for the Fantasy Sports Writers Association, which I've been a member of for like 9 years. And then, of course, I'm in the one with Dave Garwans in the blog or the Mike Wars League for our podcast. And I'm doing very, very well in both those. Then I'm in your three expert leagues, which I'm doing fairly awful in two of them, but all right. So, I mean, I compete. I come out and I compete, and I take that knowledge that I'm learning throughout the year, because we're always learning, RC. You and I are both always learning. And we take that knowledge, and then we give it to our listeners, who are, of course, playing against us in some of our Blog Talk leagues, which I'm doing awful in both Blog Talk leagues. So, you know, it's what it is. You know, it's what we've developed into, and, you know, and I know and I understand that, you know, you and I, you know, we have our own lives, and we do what we want to do, and my future wasn't ever going to be in fantasy sports, but, of course, it was completely and utterly blocked in a way, really an illegal way, by, you know, by Cincotti and Company. And, you know, that's why I will never care to side with them. I will never care to forgive them, and I will never care to be involved with them because of the dirty tricks they knew. And if people knew the inside of the industry of people like them, of what they did early on just to make their name, people don't like it as much. You know, you and I stood by. We don't make money. We don't get these big, you know, advertising packages thrown at us to do things. You don't see us have sponsors during our show. But we keep on coming on and doing it. And we don't have a million listeners, you know, like a Howard Stern or something. I mean, we do it for the loyal fans that we have. And I get emails and tweets all the time. Matter of fact, I'm meeting one of my listeners this Sunday who's coming to Vegas, and I can't wait to meet Justin. You know, and it's just that's how it is. You know, I'm loyal to the group of people that for 9 years have, you know, stayed with us and, you know, and hopefully, you know, dominated in fantasy football, because that's what it's all about. To me, it's always been about a group of guys is getting together once a week. That's why I tell my wife, hey, the group of guys getting together talking football. And that's what we're about to start doing right now, is just talk football and have some fun, and maybe I'll throw some insults at you, RC, and you'll let them bounce off you like you normally do. Deal?
Well, I mean, I'm just concerned about – I know, you know, you're kind of railing on our friends Jeff and Tony, and I'm just concerned that the annual trip that they make out there to go Christmas caroling with you, I'm assuming that's canceled.
It's been yeah, it's been canceled. I have told Tony he is more than welcome to come to Vegas. He just better not, you know, see me face-to-face. The list of evil things that man has done to not only me, I mean, the whole fantasy baseball mafia hates him, including the owner of that site. I don't even know what that site is anymore. I mean, there are so many enemies he made along his way, you know, that it's not even funny. So, no, I mean, I'm not as mad at Jeff Manns. I mean, I just think Jeff's just a sellout, and he's embarrassed me because he came from my, you know, we recruited him, we trained him, and now he's turned into the monster that he is when it comes to this DFS stuff, because it's just gambling and that's what he wants to do. And, you know, he used to be a library computer technician, and now he's a master gambler, you know, gambling thousands of dollars a week on players. He has no idea what's going to happen. And, and by the way, I had an interesting conversation with Jason Swift this week, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of luck in this last week. In week 10, there's a lot of luck that played in. And I've always said it's 90% luck, 10% skill, and Jason likes to argue with me and say 70% luck, 30% skill. And I mean, you can really put whatever you want on the U2RC, whatever percentage you want on the luck. But I've stood by that for years, that 90% luck, but that 10% skill is what separates everything. It separates everything. And a great example this week was, you know, here I am in the money league that we're in all together, and, you know, and I have basically a 30-point lead, Bengals defense, and I'm going up against, you know, I mean, the guy I was playing just had all the Bengals, which we're going to talk about in a minute here too. You know, A.J. Green, Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard in there. Obviously, it was a bye week, so you kind of had to throw in a bunch of guys. And I mean, my team was limping in because of the bye week. I had 6 of my 17 rostered players on the bye week. So I limped in, he limped in, and I held him off. I held those 3 players off. I mean, A.J. Green by himself could have gotten enough points, but they didn't. And that was a little bit of luck. But what was even better luck is Jason's win. Jason was sitting here taking on – in that game, he's taking on DeAndre Hopkins and Tyler Eifert, and he had maybe, I think, a 30-point lead going in, maybe even less than that. And when DeAndre Hopkins caught that touchdown, I mean, it pulled it within, like, 5 points. And if Tyler Eifert didn't drop those 2 passes, RC, in the fourth quarter, he would have lost. because he had a 4-plus point lead that he won with. He would have lost. And Tyler Eifert, he dropped, hardly ever dropped a pass, dropped two valuable passes that would have given him close to that amount of points, if not enough to pass and lose. And it might have been a third pass he dropped. I can't remember. But because of that, Jason won. So now did Jason win because of luck or did he win because of skill? Well, no, he won because of both. He got the good luck in the 90% that he needed, and that's Eifert dropping the passes. The other guy got the bad luck because Eifert dropped the passes. And then, of course, he had the good, you know, his skill put him in the position to win in the first place. And that's exactly what happened for me. And that's what we're going to talk about right now, the rest of the show, is how you can get yourself in position to win going forward.
Yeah, and that's why, I think your ratio, who knows, it might be true, but I kind of agree with Jason about the 70-30. Matter of fact, it's more like, 70-20-10, where 70% luck, 20% skill, and 10% is really just determination and actually staying on top of your leagues. And for us too, that's a challenge because, we're in so many leagues that, you have to stay on top of, picking up players and all that. But by the way, just before we move on, I just wanted to share my last week's FanDuel story.
He's trying to get crazy with it. Don't you know I'm local?
What the hell?
I have no idea what that was.
There were some sound bites that I've missed. That wasn't one of them. So my FanDuel story from this last week, which, as you know, I live in New York, and that it was okay to, I had like $55 left in my account. So I figured, all right, well, this is the last week, so I'm just going to, join $55 worth of contests. So the end result was $55 worth of contests, and I won 47. So... and it's kind of like Warren Buffett's line about how you become a millionaire, which is you start with $1 billion and you start an airline. So, that's what FanDuel basically is. So, I mean, if you're not like one of these high stake guys who are going to basically play like every possible, possibility and, calculate your odds. And by the way, that's probably what their algorithms are all about. It's really saying, well, if I put up $2,000, how many possibilities can I cover? What's my potential payout from that? That's really where the algorithms probably come in. But if you're just a casual player on FanDuel, you're just going to get wiped out.
That's skill.
What's that?
That's
no,
skill.
It's not. No, it's not skill. Obviously, we both know that. But anyway, so they. And, obviously there's going to be weeks where you're going to bet $50 and you're just going to lose all of it. Or, you'll usually win like a $2 or like you said, like, $5, So the ratio, can get worse. But
I had 180 points. I put up 180 something points that week that I played in a $20 million league on DraftKings. And I told you I had 6 touchdowns between Devontae Freeman and Joseph Randle, the game they played against each other. And I also had Tom Brady as my quarterback, and I think I even had Gronk in there because I went so cheap on running backs. I had a lot of money to spend on the rest of the team. And, I had 180 points, and I won like $5 or $6. It was just a joke. It's like, dude, this is a lineup that would absolutely shred. I mean, this is the advice people want. You go out and you put this team together and you put up 180 points, and this is not in some, fancy pointed system league like our home league where it gives bonus points to the quarterback. This is standard scoring. So to put up that many points and finish behind 1,500 people, you don't have a chance in the system. You just don't have a chance. It's the way it goes. But you know what?
Yep.
People are figuring that out.
Getting back to essentially what it takes to win in fantasy, obviously you can't discount the fact that a lot of it is luck, but clearly, obviously one of the most important steps is going to be, the drafting the right players. And, that's got to be at least 20% of the whole thing. Because if you start out with like a core of the correct players, certainly luck can conspire against you by taken away Le'Veon Bell and what have you. But also, if you plan correctly in your draft and you, make calculated decisions about, drafting backups to your star players and all that kind of stuff, obviously that's not luck. I mean, that's the skill part of it, and that's obviously a big part of it.
Well, let me put it this way. Say your team puts up 2,400 points in a year in a given league. It's just, I mean, I'm talking about just in the regular season, not in the playoffs. So the 13 weeks, you put up 2,400 points. You know, what I'm trying to say out of that is that basically, you know, the luck part is not, you know, you look at it as being bad. No, I mean, it's like if you draft Antonio Brown, you know, you're going to have the good luck because he's going to produce. You know, the good luck is he just does what he's supposed to do. The bad luck is, you know, he breaks his leg and he's out for the year. But that if you look at it, if you just broke that 10% down into the points, and you said, okay, well, my skill by itself, my skill over the next person is going to garner me 240 points over 13 weeks, and that's what I'm going to win with. That's what I'm kind of talking about. I mean, I'm trying to break it down a little further, but it's that 10% that is really going to take your edge. And you're right, that 10% is in picking up the right players. Like for me this week, it was not panicking in a week where I had only 11 players to put up on my roster, and I had to roster 10 spots out of 11 players. The only guy I didn't start that was startable was Sam Bradford as my backup quarterback. But outside of that, I mean, you know, I had, you know, I went out and I picked up Chris Givens, and I went out and I got, you know, I had bad luck. I got Owen Daniels because, you know, both my tight ends, I had Ladarius Green and Antonio Gates, both on the bye. That was two of my six players in the bye. You know, I basically went with my running back crew that my skeleton crew. I had to go and get Jamal White, who stunk. But it was the fact that I drafted great receivers. I had a great quarterback in Aaron Rodgers who made a great comeback in Detroit. That was luck. I mean, you know, you had an awful game, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, he turns on the afterburners and gets me points. I look at that as a little bit of luck. But in the end, my skill of putting together the best possible team for the best possible week managed to pull out a win for me. And, you know, and I'm sure it's been done by a lot of other people out there in the fantasy land. And the end result is that we get it done. We get it done.
Yeah, and by the way, on the issue, like you brought up Antonio Brown and having the skill to pick him. Well, first of all, you have to have the right spot to pick him. But what convert, you know, when you take the opposite side of that and say you have the number five pick and you picked C.J. Anderson this year, was it luck that he did not fulfill what you expected him? See, that's where the skill comes in, too, because, like, I think, you know, we both understood that someone like C.J. Anderson, with such a limited sample size coming into this season, and with a, you know, it didn't help that he also was an undrafted free agent. So it's like when he went through the whole round of, you know, courting NFL teams and nobody wanted him, you know, through seven rounds of the draft, and all of a sudden this guy has, you know, puts together like this amazing six-game stretch, and coming into this year he was going at number five or six. I stayed far away from him except for the Pirates League, and then he killed me. That was, you know, so if you picked him, you only have yourself to blame for, granted, that could have worked out, but the odds are that something bad was going to happen because you didn't have enough sample size to really truly know if he was the real deal, right?
That is exactly right. And a lot of people would look at those numbers from last year, especially late in the season, the last half of the season, and jump on C.J. Anderson. You and I, we didn't even look at him, and I didn't draft him in one league. But, you know, a guy I did like was Devontae Freeman, and I went after him in as many leagues as I could. And, you know, he proved to be so far, you know, obviously one of the reasons why I'm dominating in a couple, not dominating, but doing very well in a couple of the leagues I'm in. So it's, you know, that's where the skill plays in. And we have Kenny on the line, so we'll get to Kenny in a minute. We're going to wrap up the segment on the players that can burn your team, and then we'll get to him. But, it is fundamentally important to focus primarily. And like I said, you can go out on your little shows and you can talk, you can make all the jokes you want and make all the woman and sexual innuendos you want. I mean, it's just absolutely, just stupid. But what I preach here is win it in the trenches, which I've always said, and consistency. Find the players that put up consistent points. You know, you can go out there and tell people, I mean, it's so easy to tell people, draft this guy, draft Adrian Peterson, draft, you know, Le'Veon Bell. I mean, it, that, that's a no-brainer. Even a person who just started playing for the first year will know that. But it's getting the consistent players and the bench to back them up, because you're always going to lose players. Every team loses players, RC, and that's where the luck plays in. Every team is going to have bad bye weeks. At some point, you're not going to be able to spread out your team. If you try to do that, you're going to draft horribly. So the key is to have is remain deep as you possibly can, and to draft players that score consistently. You know, so you know, going out and telling somebody to take Kamar Aiken, well, you know, that's great advice when the one week where he puts up a touchdown, and then you're going to go on your show and you're going to cheer yourself and pat yourself on the back. But the end result was he's not really a very good fantasy player, because the next week he's going to blow it for you, and he did. So that just he's done a lot. So, you know, that's just why it doesn't work out that way. So we preach consistency, and that's why let's cover some of these players, RC, that you should try to avoid. And when I say by avoid, RC, I think I explained it to you, is try to trade them. Try to get rid of these guys off your roster and try to find not – you know, at this point in the season, you're either in the playoff hunt or you're in the playoffs or you're not. So if you're in the playoffs and maybe you're 8-2 and you're pretty much cruising in and you know you're going to clinch at some point, awesome. Now, you know, and I don't even know if you can trade at this point in your league. You know, most leagues you shouldn't be able to trade at this point. But if you can, this is the players we recommend that you try to stay away from. And I'm going to give a couple, RC, and I want you to let me know what you think about them. I'm going to name three teams off the bat. I'm going to say three teams. You avoid players on these teams automatically. Are you ready, RC?
Yep.
Detroit Lions, any player. Don't put them on your fantasy roster. I mean, I know everyone's getting excited about Amir Abdullah getting some extra points. Yeah, I guess if you're in a 16-team league and you're having a horrible bye week, throw them in there. But if not, avoid Detroit Lions. Avoid the Bengals, except for I would leave out Tyler Eifert. He's the only one I'm going to leave off that list. If his name isn't Tyler Eifert, his initials aren't T-E, avoid him. I know people are saying, well, it's A.J. Green. Yeah, you know, A.J. Green can put up, like RC and I talked about earlier, he can put up 50 points for you in 1 week, and he can also drop a bomb like he did the last week and give you like 7 or 8 points, whatever he put up. You don't need that out of a top-flight wide receiver. And the final one is the Colts, especially without Andrew Luck. I mean, and he hasn't been that good anyways to begin with. He's been a burner for your fantasy. If you drafted Andrew Luck like RC and I did, you're probably still reeling from that. Luckily for me, you know, I was able to make some trades in one of the leagues I had him in. I got Aaron Rodgers and unloaded him right before he got hurt. But the end result is that anybody on the Colts, they're not going to put up great numbers for you. Not Moncrief, not Hilton, not Fleener, not Gore, not Johnson, not Hasselbeck, you know, these guys are going to burn your fantasy roster. So those are my first three, RC. I can explain further, but I'd like you to give us – I know there's a lot of players there. What are some players that you think will burn you and you're on your way to getting into the playoffs and then into the playoffs?
Well, you know, like we were discussing, I like to look at the schedule during the critical 14 to 16 weeks. And, you know – this is kind of surprising, and you kind of wonder if this is worth noting because they seem to be impervious to really any matchup. But the team with the worst passing matchup in weeks 14 and 16 is probably the Patriots. And when you look at what they're going to have to go up against, it doesn't sound horrible, but remember, you know, they're at Houston in week 14. Now, remember, Houston is the team that just shut down the Bengals passing game. So maybe that wasn't, you know, that's not the Patriots, obviously. So, but, you know, that is something to consider. And once again, it's at Houston. Then they play Tennessee. All right, that's not a big deal. But then the week 16, they're at New York to play the Jets. So, you know, that's a team to be careful about. I think, you know, obviously with that particular circumstance there, you're probably not going to even want to basically pay any attention to it. You're certainly not going to, you know, scramble around to make trades. You're not going to trade Tom Brady away, you know, because of that. But you certainly don't want to stack your team with Patriots, right? Because what will happen is, you know, those are good defenses against the pass. So you know, if you have Blunt and maybe one or two of the Patriots passing game, you're probably going to be okay. But you don't want to have, you know, basically more than like three players from the Patriots, even though they've just been a juggernaut and obviously almost unstoppable. You know, that's just something to consider. And then the worst rushing matchup that I'm seeing is the Panthers. And now the way that I come to this conclusion, you know, like I was telling you, it's not just the teams that you're playing. It's the teams that you're playing and their opponents. So, you know, certainly like a defense could look good if, you know, basically they have played like really weak rushing attacks for 5 weeks in a row. That can be misleading because it looks like their defense is shutting them down, but they're getting a lot of help by the fact that their opponent sucks. So what this method accounts for the potency of the offenses that the team is playing, so accounts for that. Now, if you do it that way, you know, the algorithms are kind of saying that the Panthers have a bad matchup against the rush. But it doesn't look that way. I mean, I'm seeing that they're playing Atlanta twice. And for some reason, Atlanta is estimated to be tough against the run. They certainly don't look that way just using the conventional method, but I guess because of their opponents, I mean, that's how it's coming out. So if you go by that, then what you're going to want to do is unload Jonathan Stewart. And, you know, certainly his value is fairly high. And, you know, and it's not going to be a great loss if you can get, you know, a good running back in return. So, I mean, those would be the two situations that I would point out.
And that's excellent. I mean, you know, and I can't disagree with you. I mean, Jonathan Stewart is definitely the type of player who, and he's having a fabulous year, and we're so happy to see him finally start playing more to the potential that we saw in him years ago when it was him and D'Angelo Williams there in Carolina, and now it's the Jonathan Stewart show. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, these players aren't bad players, and we're not sitting here saying that they're not going to, you know, at some point in the final weeks of the season, put up great games for you. But if you're on par to, you know, if you need to win a game, like there's some leagues I'm in where I need to win out. There are some leagues I'm in where I need to win a couple of games and I'll be in the playoffs. You know, so every situation is a little bit different for you. You know, so now you have to start, you know, deciding like in one league in the Evan Silva league, in the Riders league that I'm in. You know, I drafted Andrew Luck with my second round pick. I think I had the first overall pick or second overall pick, and with the late second round pick, I took, you know, Andrew Luck, and they gave me a little bit of crap for that, and I was a little upset about that because, like, listen, you know, we're all our own expert here. You know, nobody should give anybody gripes for who they want to pick, how they want to draft. Let's see how it finishes off the end of the season. Well, I'm 7-3 in that league, and I'm in third place overall. Evan Silva is dominating right now, I think, at 9-1, and then two of us are tied for second place at 7-3. So that's awesome. But I cut Andrew Luck. I actually cut Andrew Luck and picked up Tony Romo a couple of weeks ago because the guy who owned Tony Romo and had him on the IR let him go. Well, that was his mistake. Hopefully his mistake. I don't know yet. And hopefully my gain in that, because now I have the opportunity to, you know, and I still have Derek Carr on that team as well. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't back up my Andrew Luck pick. But sometimes you have to make moves like that. And you know how much I adore Andrew Luck. He's had an awful year, injury problems, bad offensive line, player personnel issues, just with the fact that his receivers have been hurt. But, you know, at some point you got to cut ties. You know, and another guy I want to talk about, Lamar Miller. I mean, this is a guy who's good and bad. I know we're going to bring in Kenny here in a minute as soon as the segment's done, and he's going to ask about Lamar Miller. But this is a guy, RC, that I think you need to have, you know, if you can move him, I would just move him. I would just sit here and try to get a more consistent producing player. I mean, let me get an opinion from you on Duke Johnson, okay? Now, if you go look at Duke Johnson's numbers, as to the point where he started getting into a rhythm, I mean, obviously at the beginning of the season, you know, he didn't do a whole lot. So I'm not going to really look at his start. I mean, he is a rookie. You know, he kind of had to earn his play, if you know what I mean. But if you go look at his numbers that he's put up throughout the season, let's start back, you know, he had game one, he didn't do much. He didn't really start getting involved until the third game of the season. And he's mainly involved in the receiving game, where he had 6 catches, and he had 9 catches, and he had 6 catches, and he had 3, 7, 2, 2, 4. And, of course, in the game where he had 2 catches, he did have a touchdown in that game. This is a guy who is putting up a little bit more consistency. And he's on a team where they can't run the ball, so they have to pass. And he's on a team where, you know, I mean, right now, of course, his numbers have gone down because he has Manziel throwing to him. So hopefully McCown will come back and his numbers will go back up just like every other player on Cleveland. But, you know, this is a guy that I like. And I would say, you know, if Manziel can be the starting quarterback, I'd pretty much say stay away from the Cleveland Browns as well as a whole, because he brings them all down. Even though he's putting some good numbers himself, he's still bringing them down. But what do you think about Duke Johnson? Is he a player? He's not going to kill it. I'm not talking about him putting up 20, 30 points a game. But if you need a solid flex player or even possibly a running back number 2 because you've lost so many players, is he consistent enough in putting up 10, 12 points a game that he can at least put those points in your lineup every week for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Duke. I mean, Duke Johnson's kind of like, you know, the poor man's Giovanni Bernard, you know, and he's going to be affected by game situations. And, you know, certainly like the last 2 weeks, Cleveland's gotten blown out, essentially, you know, losing an average of like 30 to 10. So that obviously is going to cut into you know, his rushing attempts, and those have severely dropped over the last 3 games, where he had an average of probably 2.5 rushing attempts for almost nothing. But he's still fairly involved in the passing game. He's a guy that will get you, very much like someone like Dexter McCluster, except more consistent than him. You know, Duke Johnson is a guy that, you know, he had like a 52-yard catch 3 weeks ago against Arizona. You know, he had a 34-yard catch, a, you know, 27-yard catch. So he's definitely worth using, but, you know, a lot of that situation is going to be dictated by, you know, essentially how the game flows. And that's why, you know, he's a guy that I understand your point. You have to be especially careful, you know, more matchup dependent than the typical running back, you know, it seems. And when you look at, you know, his schedule, it's not good. So, I mean, after coming out of his bye week, he's got to play, you know, Baltimore, Cincinnati, San Fran, you know, is really nothing to fear that much anymore. But then he closes out at Seattle and then at Kansas City. But once again, because he's real, so this is really probably really bad news for Crowell, as if things were going good for him, which obviously they're not. But Duke Johnson is, you know, these games, if they can keep him close, it's not like these are, you know, really threatening offenses where they're going to get blown out, although they very well could because they're the Cleveland Browns and that's really their tradition. But Duke Johnson has more of a chance to be involved in a close game because of his utility as a pass catcher. So, yeah, is he useful? Yeah. As a number 3 flex? Yeah. Not. I wouldn't say he's really a number 2 running back, though.
I think that him having, you know, the situation where they're getting blown out is fine because, you know, if you notice what a lot of these teams have been doing this year, it's been a philosophy amongst all the teams, whether it be the Patriots, the Giants, you know, the Cleveland Browns. I mean, like I said, it's been a little bit of a problem with Manziel because he's trying to, like, make a name for himself rather than just move the ball in some cases. But you just, like, throw to your little outlet receivers. Hey, you know, you're getting blown out. They put a dime package on the field, and they're covering all your wide receivers, and you just keep flipping it to the running back. And that's where I think Duke Johnson's value is going to be. So if he's facing some of these tougher defenses where, you know, Sherman's, you know, blanketing Travis Benjamin and Brett and Hartline's covered and locked down and, you know, and Chancellor's taking care of Barnage, well, you know what? That's going to leave, you know, Duke Johnson in the flat. And let me tell you, if he catches a pass and only gets 2 yards, that's 1.2 points you just got, just for a little catch. So, you know, but at this point, you know, in the season, you're fighting for every point you can because all these games are going to be tight going forward. They should be.
Yeah, but he's not. I mean, you mentioned Lamar Miller. Lamar Miller, depending on your team roster, he could be a number 1 running back for you, and he's probably no less than a number 2. Duke Johnson ideally is like a flex guy that you use, and hopefully you've got some other guys that you can shuffle in and out based on, you know, more favorable matchups. You know, that's all I'm saying. I think Crowell at this point is probably droppable. I mean, that's how bad he's been. And when you look at the upcoming schedule, it doesn't look like it's going to get much better. So Crowell is probably droppable, but Duke Johnson, you know, definitely worth hanging on to. And if, you know, even if he is your number two running back, I mean, I don't think that's awful. You know, if you've got good receivers to put in your flex positions, then I think you're going to be fine.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm not dogging Lamar Miller too much. I'm just saying, listen, you know, because he's had some great games lately. Even last week where he only put up like 40, 50 yards, but I think he got like 6 or 7 catches. And that's where, you know, a lot of the points are made. But he worries me because of his inconsistency and really Miami's inconsistency. I mean, they're playing well right now under the new coach. They're fired up, you know, but how long that will last, you know, before we see either old Miami or the Miami we expected that we're currently seeing. We'll see how that goes. You know, they have Dallas this week, so they have a favorable matchup. Lamar Miller should be able to put some, you know, put some yards down. I mean, you know, Cowboys are, you know, hit or miss on their defense. So we'll see which Cowboys come out, if they're going to have Sean Lee out there or not. Who knows? But that'll be interesting to see. The final guy that I want, and then we got to get to Kenny.
By the way, with the Miami situation, if there's one guy that's benefited from the coaching change, it's obviously Lamar Miller at the expense of the passing game. So whatever the old regime was doing was a little more lopsided with the pass. Certainly, when this new coaching staff came in, they focused on Lamar Miller. He's definitely been a lot better than he was before the coaching change. You know, on Miami, by the way, the other guy who I don't get. I mean, it just happens every year. Everyone's like tricked into drafting him, but their tight end Cameron. I mean, this guy, he's usually drafted as like, you know, pretty much, this year I think he was probably like maybe the fifth tight end off the board. And there were probably like 4 or 5 guys after him that have had, you know, far more productive seasons. But, you know, what before or after the coaching staff didn't matter. He just sucks.
He does, and, you know, I got in a massive argument with another expert one time when I said, yeah, I thought Jason Witten in, like, whatever round I took him in, it was last year, the 7th or 8th round, I thought that was a better pick than getting Jordan Cameron in, like, the 5th or 6th round. And he went ballistic on me, and I'm just like, okay, dude, I mean, first of all, it's a tight end. Number two, it's Cameron versus Witten. And in the end, of course, Cameron was out most of last year and didn't do much with the Browns. And, of course, now he's a Dolphin. And Witten went on to have a solid year. So, again, you go for consistency. I mean, Jason Witten is going to have bad games. Everybody does. But he's a very consistent tight end, and that he's going to, you know, give you that hopefully double-digit 10 to 15 points every game. Get 6 catches for 60 yards. You know, hopefully get in the end zone now that Romo's back. Obviously, it's been a problem for him with Castle and Whedon. Who, by the way, really quickly, you know that the Cowboys cut Brandon Whedon, and he has a very good chance that he could start for the Houston Texans, who are in the playoff hunt now with this win. He could start for the Texans. So, you know, and then I want to get on. We got to get over to Kenny now. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, bring Kenny in, by the way, if he's still there. We apologize for that. Well, the Texans are going with Case Keenum, you know, for now. But you're right. I could see Brandon Whedon end up starting games for them. And, you know, they're just, you know, that team is very resilient. I mean, I was really impressed with their defense, you know, this past week. They've lost Arian Foster, and I think they're going to be fine with those 3 guys that they have replacing them. DeAndre Hopkins obviously has emerged into an elite receiver. They're just a really resilient team, so they're pretty impressive. And Brandon Whedon could very well be the guy that closes out the season for them. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, right now the roster has. I mean, they have Savage, who I believe is out right now with injury. He's not even active. He's on injury reserve. And then they have Yates, and then of course Whedon and Hoyer, who's going through the concussion protocol. So if Hoyer can't make it, I mean, did they sign Casey Keenum again? Is he on the roster again?
I mean, I heard he's going to be the guy that they go with. We can double check that, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be the guy they end up going with.
Okay. All right. Anyways, let's get to Kenny. And the last guys I was going to add to that list is, you know, obviously Andy Brown, Demaryius Thomas, Latavius Murray, James Jones, and Kirk Cousins. Those are guys that, you know, they're looking. Some of them are looking spitty right now. Some of them are looking bad right now. You know, like, you know, Kirk Cousins is looking all right. He's been doing, you know, fine off and on. Those aren't the guys you want to take onto your playoff roster. All right, RC, let's go ahead and get over to Kenny. He always listens from his phone, so don't worry about it.
Oh, wait. By the way, I'm sorry. I'm mistaking the team situation for a different team. But, yeah, Brian Hoyer is likely out for Week 11, and it looks like Yates would get the start with Whedon backing him up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but Keenum is – I heard he was starting for somebody. We'll find out. But yeah, if you want to bring in Kenny. Yeah.
Kenny, how you doing?
I'm pretty good, Todd. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. So I bet you started Lamar Miller last week. Did you not?
Absolutely.
And you didn't worry about that crazy backup of his, did you?
No, I didn't worry about Ajayi, yeah, you know. But what's really interesting about him is that he leads the league in, like, 20-plus yard runs, and he's only been activated 2 weeks.
Wow.
So
he's a good young guy, but, I mean, you know, the focus has been on Miller, so, you know, you got to ride that gravy train while you can.
Definitely. Okay, so I made a trade. I dealt Langford for Diggs and Gore. So this league is kind of like
Gore.
Yeah, I dealt Langford for Diggs and Gore.
Interesting. I mean, that could actually work out pretty well, depending on when Forte gets back. That might have been perfect timing. You know, Gore is going to be needed more than ever. I think, you know, obviously he's not a keeper guy. You know, this year might be the last time that we see him as effective as he's been. But to close out the year, you know, just for this year, that makes sense. And Diggs seems really like the real deal. I mean, he's been their most consistent receiver. So if you need a receiver, I don't think that's a horrible trade. By the way, I'm sorry, Case Keenum is starting for the Rams. So it was Nick Foles that got benched Case. Yep.
Okay, so
right.
For
but
this
I,
week.
What, Todd, what do you think of that trade? Langford for Diggs?
Well, of course I love it. I mean, as good as Langford is, I mean, Forte is coming back. So, and getting Stephon Diggs, I mean, you know, the others don't really matter. The other side of the trade doesn't really matter. It's really about Stephon Diggs. I mean, Gore is just merely a placeholder with the running backs that Kenny has access to. So I definitely like, you know, getting Stephon Diggs to power up your wide receiver core. I mean, wide receivers are like, you know, it's like trying to find water in a desert, man, with wide receivers this year. I mean, I saw, you know, I had to battle for, who's that with that Redskin wide receiver, Chowder, whatever his name is. I mean, you know,
yeah,
it's like, where did he come from? Yeah, it's like he had 5 catches in a touchdown. And I'm so desperate for wide receivers in a couple leagues, I put a waiver pick in for him, and I didn't get him in either league, RC. So anyways, Kenny, great. I think it's a fine trade.
Great. Thanks, guys. Okay, so for this week, you know, I had I'm pretty weak at the quarterback position. So I have Brock Osweiler and Fitzpatrick.
Wow. In that case, I mean, Osweiler is a very much an unknown quantity, obviously. He's got great receivers, though. Fitzpatrick, as you know, just had that ligament repaired. He is on schedule to start. He practiced today. So it looks like he's definitely going to make it. That I think this is like a definite matchup-dependent question. So if we look at like the Jets are playing Houston, and Denver is playing Chicago at Chicago. Both teams are on the road. I'm going to say I'm going to say Osweiler here and take a shot with him.
Yeah, I mean, is those, I mean, is that really the best you have? That, I mean, it's, you know, Osweiler is not that bad, but is this really the best choice that you have, Kenny?
Yeah, there's not much on the waiver wire. We have a it's only a 10-team league, but every team is required to say roster two quarterbacks. That's the issue.
And just out of curiosity, is Hasselbeck available?
Hasselbeck is available, yes.
Okay. I'm not saying you're saying that Hasselbeck is a better start. I mean, he's proven, though, that, you know, he can do a good job. Osweiler hasn't really proven that. I mean, he looked all right in coming in for Peyton Manning, you know, against really what I thought was an awful defense. I mean, most people were just crapping on the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, especially with a lot of the losses they had in the secondary. But you got the Bears. It's going to be in Chicago. That's going to be a little bit, you know, it's a little bit dangerous. Bears are playing well. What are they won, like 4 or 5 in a row? You know, you're going into a hostile environment. On the flip side, you have Indianapolis going into a dome, which they're comfortable in a dome, playing against a very, very powerful offensive team in the Atlanta Falcons, who are coming off their bye week. Actually, both teams are coming off their bye week. I think that, you know, the sneaky play here would be to go with Hasselbeck, because I think he's pretty much guaranteed to give you, because he's going to be throwing a lot. He just is. 250 yards, 2 touchdowns. And he probably will keep the ball out of the other team's hands at least no more than once. You know, I kind of like him. In this case, I would go with the wily veteran over the young Brock Osweiler, and I wouldn't even consider Fitzpatrick at this point, especially against Houston.
Okay. All right. I can pick up Fitzpatrick. I mean, pick up Hasselbeck tomorrow.
Okay. RC, do you think that's a bad, that's horrendous advice I'm just giving him? Should I slam my head through a wall?
No, I mean, to me, if Hasselbeck wasn't an option, I would probably go with Osweiler. But, you know, Indy is playing Atlanta. That game's going to be probably a shootout. So no matter how bad Hasselbeck is, as long as he can avoid, you know, turnovers and interceptions and messy stuff like that, he should definitely put up numbers at least as good as Osweiler and potentially better, you know. But, you know, certainly when Hasselbeck got his last start, that was that weird game where that was the only game of the year that Andre Johnson actually did anything. So, you know, I'm kind of skeptical about that. And maybe that was against Houston too. So maybe it was because of Houston's coverage and they weren't covering him. You definitely have a valid point. I think that makes sense. That he could turn out to be the best guy to start, no doubt.
All right, okay. Kenny. All right. What else you got for us?
So for wide receivers this week, do you like Diggs or do you like Sammy Watkins?
Oh, the reemergence of Sammy Watkins. You know, man, people weren't talking about him very much, and then all of a sudden now, RC, he's definitely in the frame. You got Diggs going up in a big game against Green Bay, and it's in Minnesota, so they're going to be playing where I used to be under a dome. Now it's an outdoor stadium. And then you got Sammy Watkins. That's on Monday night against the Patriots and Rex Ryan. Listen, there's one thing I like to stay out of, RC. I like to stay out of the Rex Ryan, Bill Belichick, because it really never goes well for either of them, particularly for Rex Ryan. So in this case, here's what I'm going to advise you. Go with Stephon Diggs. The Minnesota Vikings are going to this game. They got something to prove. They're on top of the division now, and the Packers are reeling. Now, I'm not saying the Packers are going to lose this game, but this is a definite statement game. You're at home late in the season. You beat the Packers. You now have a 2-game lead on them, and I believe that would be a split in the season series. I think they've already played once, and Green Bay beat them. If they haven't, you have the division, then you have the season series lead. Wow, big game, big moment for Stephon Diggs. I would roll the dice with the young rookie and go with him, RC. How about you?
Yeah, I think this comes down to whether or not, you know, you need the upside or you need the consistency. Because as we've seen with Sammy Watkins, his upside is probably greater than Diggs. However, his downside is also zero. Or close to zero, then get hurt, and then we don't see him again. So the opponent that you're playing, I mean, is this a team that you think, I mean, when you compare your lineups, you know, that they could potentially beat you by like 20 points? Or is it a team where you feel that you have the upper hand, or at least you're on par with them? Because if you're on par with them, or you believe that your team is superior, then I agree with Todd, you stick with Diggs, because he's the guy that's more likely to get you consistent points, where Sammy Watkins, especially against Belichick, could very well come away from this game with a zero.
We're about even this week, I guess.
Yeah, then I agree with Todd. I would stick with Diggs. But, you know, obviously Watkins is the more talented guy with the best upside, but, you know, only in a week where you thought, you know, it was really critical to have upside, you know, high upside guys, would I go with Watkins. Otherwise, he's just so unreliable.
And don't get me wrong, King. I think that Sammy Watkins is one of the most talented wide receivers in the NFL. It's just the matchup. I mean, you know that because it's Rex Ryan that, you know, Bill Belichick throws a book at him. And it just never goes well for Rex. I mean, I really wish Rex would have left the AFC East altogether, and just, like, you know, went and started, like, coaching, you know, I don't know, the Texans or something. Just got out of there, because it would have made life a little bit easier for him. But either way, that's what I like.
But, you know, bottom line, you know, here's another thing to consider. I don't think you can really go wrong with either of these guys. Once again, you know, with Watkins' inconsistency, you're taking a risk there. But then again, any play is a risk. But from what I'm seeing, both matchups are very favorable for the pass. Even though Green Bay on paper looks stronger, you know, like we were discussing before, like if you look at like the quality of their opponents, the Green Bay matchup looks very favorable for the Vikings. And then both on the basis of just raw numbers, and on the basis of quality opponents, New England is also a very favorable matchup.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, no problem, Kenny. Hopefully you win and you do very well, and you'll let us know.
Definitely. Thanks, guys. I'll be listening to the rest of the show. You're doing a great job, as always.
All right, thank you, Kenny.
All right, thanks, man.
Okay.
Oh,
good luck.
All right, RC. We got a few more minutes. I did want to cover let's cover some injuries. I would love to do the roster matchup. I had a roster matchup of you versus Chris, who's my brother, another expert in the big league. I think it's a great matchup for this week. One where he's just reeling because of his problems that he's having with the bye weeks. Or we could cover some injuries. What would you like to do?
Yeah, let's cover. I saw that matchup, and poor Chris, I noticed that many of his key players are on bye, to the extent where he's starting some. When I first looked at who he was starting, I was like, wait a minute, because he's like 7-2 or whatever. I was like, how is this team 7-2? And then when I looked at his bench, I saw all his players are on a bye. So
yeah,
he probably isn't
devastated.
Yes. Yeah, but then again, he might beat me anyway. So, I mean, that's just the way it goes. So in terms of injuries, I mean, over with the Bucs, I mean, it's kind of interesting that Austin Seferian Jenkins still has not been cleared for contact. And, you know, this has been going on now, it seems, since week three. You know, very strange, but, you know, if you were picking him up as a sneaky play at tight end, you know, that doesn't look like it's going to work out once again. Also, Vincent Jackson over there is expected to miss that game. DeAndre Hopkins missed practice today with a knee injury. As we mentioned, Fitzpatrick had his thumb repaired. He is scheduled to start as he normally would. T.J. Yeldon is considered questionable for the game coming up tomorrow against the Titans. He is saying that he's going to play, but, you know, realize this is obviously a short week. He just had a walking boot taken off yesterday. and I don't believe he practiced today. So that's one. If you're depending on him, you got to be careful with that because that could be a last minute thing where they scratch him. But if he's, you know, if he's active, I would say you probably want to stick with him, depending on who else you got, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it always depends. I mean, listen, Hopkins. I loved him so much like 2 years ago when he came out, and this year I was not able to get him, and he's just blossomed into the wide receiver that, you know, really both of us expected him to be. And I can't. He's an automatic start. I mean, it doesn't make a difference who's throwing to him. That kid can catch. So, he's just filthy. So as long as you keep an eye on him, if he's playing, start him.
Right. Kendall Wright is not going to play tomorrow night's game against the Jaguars, so scratch him. It turns out that Sam Bradford has a separated shoulder, so it definitely looks like Mark Sanchez is going to be the guy that, by the way, with Kenny's situation, you know, if Mark Sanchez is on the wire, would you take him over Hasselbeck?
RC?
I take that as a no without you expanding
Sanchez, on that. Sanchez asked me, stop writing him. Stop driving past his house. Okay? I'm just kidding. No, Sanchez, you know, I mean, you have to think, it's like, why would Chip Kelly get rid of Nick Foles, go with Sam, trade for Sam Bradford, obviously, in that whole deal, trade for Sam Bradford, and then not go with Sanchez, especially after how good he looked? There's something fundamentally wrong there. And I think the big problem with Mark Sanchez is his slowness in his decision making, and his his ability to turn the ball over. And I think that's the worry, and that's why he's not the starter in Philadelphia to start the season. If not, he's a very talented, otherwise talented quarterback. So I would say, Hasselbeck is just, I watched him in both those games, because one of them was like a Monday night game or a night game or Sunday night game, something like that, and maybe the Thursday night game. And it was just he just looked very comfortable, and, you know, he actually looked better than Andrew Luck. You know, and I think it was a struggle for the Colts to actually go back to Luck. So I think for one game play for, like, a Kenny right there, I mean, there's one league where I'm picking up Matt Hasselbeck in, and I don't know if I'm going to start him because it's a league where I would have Drew Brees in. And I had no – that's right. I know I had no backup for Drew Brees. I must have cut my backup, you know, a long time ago. And I picked up Hasselbeck, and I'm going to start Hasselbeck. I believe it's one of the Blog Talk leagues, but don't hold me to that. So I think he could put up in a shootout 200-plus yards and two touchdowns, maybe not turn the ball over. I mean, Atlanta is really not the most secure defense in the world. So, especially if they're playing in a nickel or dime defense most of the second half, I think it'll be a fun game. And I think Hasselbeck could actually beat the Falcons, especially with how poor they've been playing lately. So I wouldn't go to Sanchez, but you can go with Sanchez. Do you want to have a bet? Do you want to make that our bet for this week? Sanchez versus Hasselbeck?
Jeez. Yeah, why not?
Okay, I got the perfect.
Obviously, I'm not that committed to it, but I got a fair chance of winning that.
Let's hope the soundbite works.
Breakout sleepers and busts present.
That wasn't it.
No, I mistitled it. Oh my god, that stinks. I'll throw this at myself. You know. There you go. Here's our soundbite now for the bet we're making since our normal one doesn't work. Where is it? Oh my gosh, I gotta find it. There you go.
Damn, I'm good. Can you feel that? Huh? Can you feel it, Captain Compost?
What the hell was that?
Dude, I mean, I it's like so many of my soundbites just don't work, and it's killing me. Here's our reckless wager right here. It works. I mean, it's literally running. I mean, I've had so many problems with Blog Talk Radio. I mean, maybe it's my sound bites. I don't know, but I reload.
Well, you know what? I think it's more serious than that. I think you're a victim of some kind of cyber terrorism. where somebody snuck sound bites onto wherever you store them. Because I don't recognize some of the ones that you've played tonight. I mean, these are ones I've never heard before, and they make no sense, and they're not in the context of anything. So it's cyber terrorism. I would file a report with you.
Bow to your sensei!
I think it's Jeff. Remember Jeff threatened the AG of New York, you know, with his research. So now he's coming out of my iCloud. He's trying to look up, like, nude photos of myself. Well, guess what, Jeff? If you find the nude photos, I'm pretty well taken care of down south. So don't worry about it, buddy. You know, I wouldn't mind those photos getting out. I'm kidding. I'm just trying to be ballsy because I feel good. I think we had a great show today, RC. It's been fantastic. You know, I'm going to head off now to the UNLV Running Rebel basketball game and have a blast with my family. I wish you were here. But I promise you, if you were here, RC, I would take you. First of all, I'd hug you for coming to Vegas. Big, big hug, similar to the one I gave you in New York. Yes, I felt your package. I had to. Part of the game. You know, if you want to trust somebody on a show and you want to be close, you got to fill them up. My female coworkers don't appreciate that at work. But, hey, it's trust. How many lawsuits am I picking up here?
You know, it's a good thing that we're probably shut off by now. Because,
it's actually even a better thing that you're my lawyer. So that makes it even better. What? You're just like, Todd, don't do that, Todd. Don't say that, Todd. You guys have no idea. After the show, RC will call me back up and say, I can't believe you said that. You can't say that next time. You know. All right, man. No, we're actually still going, but I'm going to get us out of here now. I love you, and it was a great show. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, I can remember, guys, consistency and focus on winning. RC, any last-minute advice?
No, same thing. You know, I echo that. That's good advice for this week.
All right.
Good
luck. Good luck, too, and we'll see you guys all next week. And, hey, don't try too hard to beat my brother in the Money League, RC, because me and you are tied for the division, and I kind of want that division. Right?
Yeah, he always beats me. He'll figure out some way, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care. Bye.